Good morning. It's good to see you all on this beautiful morning. When I was driving to clouds this morning, I looked up in the east sky. The sun was like this ball. It's red orange bright ball in the sky. I'm like, wow, it's a good day. It's a good day. I'd like to start out just by offering homage to the Buddhas and ancestors, homage to the Dakota nations whose land we are guests on, homage to our friends, our families, and our teachers for supporting us and upholding us, homage to our founding mothers and founding fathers for their teachings and for their compassion and wisdom. Thank you. I've been thinking, there's been a lot of activity that we've all been experiencing in life. And I was pondering what would be kind of the intersectionality of the current conditions that we hold in common and some of the particular conditions that might be unique to each of us at this space and time. And I thought Dogen's Tenzo Kyoken, Instructions for the Cook. It's an awesome text, awesome essay. Dogen is one of our founding ancestors, fathers of the Zen lineage. He was born in the 12th century. He offers wisdom beyond wisdom. And I would just like to touch into a little bit of what Dogen talks about in relationship to practice realization. Even in saying that, I'm kind of like a bomb just went off in my head. I'm like, wow, practice realization. Man, just saying it. It's so beautiful. I invite you in your, when you have a space and time, just try it. See what happens. The Tenzo Kyoken is beyond the scope of this talk. The essay is filled with stories, koans, teachings about the ancestors, just many, many jewels of Dharma teaching that there's no way, I'm just humbled by Dogen's vast ability and his expression of the Dharma in the moment in relationship to time and timelessness. Because today is 2018 and his teachings were created in the 12th century and they're still applicable to this moment. I was thinking this idea of a glimpse and what it's like for me is the other day I was walking down the river road and I caught something out of the corner of my eye and I kept walking. And then I'm like, no, let's just see what that might have been. So I turned around, I went back, and I looked in between the trees, and it was an eagle on a branch overlooking the river. That's like the Tenzo Kyoken. It's so vast in its teaching. One needs to just stop and really pay attention. Look at all the trees. Look at the spaces in between. And there's the jewel. And that was one of 10,000 jewels that was on the river. So I just offer that because I just want to be clear that this is just a little glimpse that I'm offering today. And this is a great book, How to Cook Your Life. From the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment, Dogen's Classical Instructions for the Zen Cook with Commentary by Kosho Uchiyama Roshi. It's a great book. There's many books. This is but one. And I just want to offer this gem. One of many throughout this essay. Handle even a single leaf of a green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. This in turn allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. This is a power which you cannot grasp with the rational mind. It operates freely according to the situation in the most natural way. At the same time, this power functions in our lives to clarify and settle activities and is beneficial to all living beings. And then he goes on to talk about preparation of a meal. That's a bomb. So I'd like to talk about that. I'd like to unpack that through the time that we have today. What does this mean, this taking care of? He uses a leaf. We could use anything. The leaf is just a metaphor for a flower, how we wake up in the morning, for how we say good morning. Greet the first person we meet in our day. How do we prepare for the day? How are we taking care of ourselves in relationship to the preparation of our day? How are we taking care of ourselves in relationship to the people in our lives? How are we taking care of ourselves in relationship to the environment in which we live? How are we taking care of ourselves in regards to the racial injustice that we experience and see in our lives? How do we take care of each other? So that's what I hear Dogen saying. We're not separate. We're not separate from these conditions. But what does that mean? I mean, when I get up in the morning, what does that mean? Sometimes I forget. I mean, I hear the alarm, boom, shut it off, get up, here we go again, another day. I invite us to slow down as much as we're able. And I'm not sitting up here. Well, I am sitting up here. I am sitting up here. And I'm sitting up here as a person connected to each of you. A person connected to each of you in these very dynamic, challenging times, in the particulars and in the collective. So we're in this together. It's very important to me that through the recent experiences I've had and the conversations I've had, we can only do this work in connection with each other, whether it's sitting in Zazen together, in the Zendo, or it's in the work that we're doing, or it's in the streets demonstrating, or it's bearing witness to these injustices. We're in this together, all of us, helping each other. In Dogen's peer standards for the Zen community, which is a manual for monastics, and having said that, I offer you it's a manual on really how to develop community living, and in Zen. We have temple officers like the Ino, like the Tenzo. Soku is the head server. So there's these different positions that really support the community functioning in as much harmony as possible, given our personalities and what we're working with. Dogen's first two sentences in this manual is, from the beginning in Buddhist families, there have been six temple administrators. They are all Buddha's children, and together they carry our Buddha work. Among them, the Tenzo. Tenzo is like Japanese word for chief cook. Has the job of taking care of the preparation of food for the community. So a Tenzo, any one of us at any point in our time are Tenzos. That's one thing that I think is important to point out is that just because somebody doesn't call you a Tenzo or somebody doesn't call you a leader, that doesn't mean you're not a Tenzo. That doesn't mean you're not a leader. What is it inside of you that you're bringing forward? If you're a parent, you are definitely a Tenzo. And if you're in other roles in the community, serving people, nourishing people with food, gardening, you're also a Tenzo. So it's important to kind of break up the social construction of what a Tenzo is. Tenzo is all of us working together, serving each other, nourishing each other through food. Traditionally, the temple officer position, including Tenzo, has been held by Roshi Zen and Zen teachers who have been practicing for years. The current conditions of our practice cannot sustain that. So we need to adjust, accommodate, and flow with what the conditions are. So I invite people that the Tenzo is dynamic, it does appear challenging, but there are many positions in life that are challenging. Tenzo is but one. It's a position that one can develop one's capacity into. This development of the ability to be nimble with plans, to be nimble with the messiness of relationships, the messiness of organizations or preparations that don't turn out. This is all part of our practice, to do what is possible within what's being offered, and to really relax as much as possible to relax within the conditions, to create more tension around conditions will only create more energy of tension. And it's no small matter in the heat of the moment when everything is beginning or appearingly collapsing around you to relax. It seems counterintuitive. And simultaneously, it's kind of amazing the possibility of how it can turn out if one does step back and create some ease in the environment. Because in that moment, in those spaces, there are 10,000 possibilities of the way it can turn out. The kitchen I've worked in the kitchen at Clouds. I've been the Tenzo here. I've been the Tenzo at Hokioji, and I've been assistant in the kitchen at Tassajara. And these have provided amazing opportunities for me to investigate and to let go of my social construction of myself, and also to develop my character and develop my humanness in relationship to all humans and objects. The kitchen almost becomes a microcosm community of the larger community within the Sangha. The small community is mighty in its capacity to nourish and serve all beings. At Clouds, the Tenzo, and maybe two, three at max, depending on the size of the event or sesshin, assistants can serve anywhere from 10 to 50 participants. At Tassajara, the Tenzo, with 8 or 9 helpers, serve between 50 and 60 participants. That, to me, is extraordinary. A small group of people bringing their concentration, bringing their energy together to serve a large group. If that model can be used, and it is being used not only in Tenzos but in other social actions, that connection is powerful. To have a few people being able to serve a large group of people, that That's beautiful. It doesn't take 10,000 people or a million people to change the conditions. I'm learning it takes two or three. I wouldn't say one at this point because we can't do it alone. And if you can, let me know. But still, that makes two. Sorry. This is the Tenzo with a small group of focused and committed practitioners can embody the Bodhisattva vow to serve all beings. The details of the work and the development of the character that I was talking about of the Tenzo as expressed by Dogen offers a manual for training the mind beyond the kitchen and the Zendo. The kitchen and Zendo are not separate. They are intimately connected. As in the picture of the old woman and young woman. There's this picture of old woman, young woman, if you've seen it back and forth. Both are embedded in interacting with each other. A few of Dogen's teaching. Use the property and possessions of the community as carefully as if they were your own eyes. Boom. Taking care of the pots, utensils, food that is cooked and uncooked wholeheartedly is developing the capacity of care with objects, where the objects, the subject and the object become one. That oneness is the connection of taking care of what's in front of me. And how does that manifest? That manifests what's ever in front. There's no hierarchy when it comes to what's important. It's all important. I mean, not important in the sense that we're going to get stressed out, but it's important in the value of being taken care of. Yeah, I mean, this idea of taking care of what's coming into my head is this bunny. But I can talk about that later. But it's letting go of what we think, what we value, what we give weight to, and we relax around that. And in our connection, we have compassion for ourselves. It naturally arises. How can I, if I am developing care for myself and care for the practice, how can I possibly have ill will for the person in front of me? And if I do, if I'm practicing, I can recognize that ill will and relax around it. So that ill will is not a rejection, it's a turning towards. And it becomes energy that can be transformed and transmuted in a way that is beneficial to me and beneficial to who's ever in front of me. Put your whole attention into the work, seeing just what the situation calls for. Having this develops a nimble mind, striving to increase actions of goodness upon a mountain of goodness. In the fascicle of doing no evil, in the Shobo Genzo, which is a fascicle of Dogen, Dogen stresses, goodness attracts goodness faster than iron to magnet. The ability to concentrate and simultaneously have a wide view of needs nourishes, I'm getting excited, I'll slow down. The ability to concentrate and simultaneously have a wide view of what needs attention currently and forward is a way to meet what needs to be met. So as a Tenzo, our focus, even though we're concentrated, we also have a wide view, 365 degrees around us to what's happening, so that we have the capacity to be able to meet whatever condition is arising. And this doesn't just happen, it's practice. It's practice in Zazen when we're sitting. It's practice when here in the kitchen if we're Tenzo. It's practicing here when we're with each other. It's practicing at home. So there's no separation. The practice is seamless. It's always happening. And Dogen's beautiful example of goodness attracting goodness faster than an iron to magnet, I've found it to be true. I invite you, try it out. Just smile at somebody and see what happens. And I could be wrong, let me know, but so far I've had pretty good luck. The way-seeking mind of a Tenzo is actualized by rolling up your sleeves. It's not a philosophical expression. It's very real. It's in the relative. It is continuously, what Katagiri Roshi says, it is continuously burning one's life in each and every encounter, developing actions that are beneficial to others, and to make things alive as they are in the moment. So there's nothing added on. It's just being present and taking care of and tending to what is in this particular moment. I want to talk about the Dharma position. I'm finding that the Dharma position, the Dharma position of the relative, for me, would be like I'm white, I'm a woman, I'm a Zen priest. So all the concrete attributes in the relative. Then there's the absolute that is intersecting with the relative. In the absolute is where we're all swimming in. It's like a fish in water, but the fish doesn't know it's in water. It's just swimming. That's kind of what is happening to us in this swimming in this absolute. The Dharma position, and I'm just giving voice to what it is I know at this point in time because it's something that I am studying and developing. The Dharma position is each one of us has our own Dharma position. What makes us uniquely, what makes you uniquely you and me uniquely me. I invite you, find your Dharma position because you're in it, we're in it whether we know it or not. And develop that Dharma position because that is what's needed in this world that is somewhat chaotic and there's somewhat unhinging in certain ways. The climate is heating up. I was recently at Tornillo, Texas, bearing witness to the concentration camps. It's no small matter, as we all know, what's going on in this country. We can be of benefit if we know who, as much as we can possibly know, what are our gifts? What is my gift in relationship to these conditions? What are my gifts in relationship to being a friend to a person who is sick? What is my gift to bearing witness at a concentration camp in Tornillo, Texas? What are my gifts in relationship to being overwhelmed and confused about the chaos that's going on in this country? What are my gifts in relationship to white privilege, in relationship to dismantling racism and doing anti-racist work? This is the Dharma position for me. These are the questions I think that are maybe particular to me, but I invite you to also ask questions of yourselves. What are my gifts? How can I be of benefit to myself? How can I be of benefit to myself and others? How do I practice this? Man, she's talking about being a Tenzo and cooking. I mean, is that a Dharma position? Possibly. That's a place to train in the kitchen. How is training in the kitchen related to the concentration camps at Tornillo, Texas? The kitchen helped me to develop compassion for myself in the midst of a lot of demands that were coming at me. I could relax. I learned to relax. I learned to let go. I learned to trust. That's all the kitchen is related. We've never been in these particular moments, these particular conditions. How could we possibly know how to act? But we train our minds, we train ourselves in compassion, we train ourselves in wisdom, we train ourselves in learning who we are and who we not, who the self is and who the not self is. There's a koan in the True Dharma Eye, Zen Master Dogen's 300 Koans, translated by Kaz Tanahashi and John Daidu Lori. It's case 14. Yongshan's Dharma position, main case. Yongshan once asked his teacher, Zen Master Guanshan Dayu of Mount Gui, how is it when millions of objects emerge all at once? Guanshan said, blue is not yellow, long is not short. All things abide in their positions. It does not concern me. Yongshan bowed. The commentary. Each and all, the subject and the objective spheres are related and at the same time independent. Related yet working differently, though each keeps its place. Two faces on the single die. Thus, no thing ever falls short of its completeness. Wherever it stands, it does not fail to cover ground. That's wisdom. This is beautiful. No thing ever fails short of its own completeness. Wherever it stands, it does not fail to cover ground. Like Suzuki Roshi said, we're perfect as we are, and we could use a little more work. Okay? We're good. We are good. As What's similar is in the harmony of difference and sameness, all the objects of the senses interact and yet do not. Interact brings involvement, otherwise each keeps its place. Or in the jewel mirror samadhi, these are both chants that we chant here at the Zen Center. A silver bowl filled with snow, a heron hidden in the moon, taken as similar, they are not the same. Not distinguished, their places are known. The meaning does not reside in the words, but a pivotal moment brings it forth. It's that moment of action. We think, and then we move. That is the pivot. The expression of subject and object co-arising and interacting and interpenetrating in each moment within and beyond is the expression of the universal energy, arising, presenting, and dissolving continuously. Historical karma and no self, relative historical karma, no self, absolute. That's the Dharma position right there, right here, right here, right now. My historical karma and my no self are simultaneously interpenetrating and interacting in connection with all of you. That's my Dharma position. That's your Dharma position, right where you are, interconnected with everybody here. It's awesome. I mean, it's beyond our minds. In real time, In real time, I'm a white woman, Zen priest, presenting an understanding of transformational practice of this teaching and working with historical karma through study, investigating habit energy, which is the same as historical karma, and practicing the transformational pivot. This is the pivot. The meaning does not reside in the words, but the pivotal moment brings it forth. The pivotal moment manifests and actualizes this moment. Wow. With the practice of meditation, there is an opportunity in the silence to bear witness to the self with compassion and the possibility of composting the energy of habit patterns in a different way of relating to self and others. So our habit patterns are compost for our ability to pivot and change. We invite them in. To turn away will only create more suffering. Also, clarity is offered in the seeing. In this seeing, there is a choice to continue forward or pivot. Continue forward as in the spaces as we know, as we already have created this groove, or do we pivot and try something new, try something different? Wisdom beyond wisdom. There's a lot here. I want to talk a little bit about, I've done some reading, I've done much reading recently, and one of the books that I read was Emergent Strategy by Adrienne Marie Brown. If you have a chance, I invite you to read it. I've been in some trainings. I was in a training with Chris Moore Backman on the Gandhian iceberg. It was brought up then. I was in a training earlier this spring, and the book was brought up then. It's really a beautiful book on, she could be Buddhist, I don't know if she is. She does meditate. But it's a book on really trusting emergence and from what's emerging, not just within the environment, but what's emerging within each of us individually and collectively and responding from there. She speaks about a couple of core, she has, I think, six or seven core principles. the principles that I want to bring forward, and this is in her book, is that small is good, small is all. Just like when I spoke about the kitchen being a microcosm community for the larger community, that's what the small, that's the small she's talking about. And that the large is a reflection of the small. Also within the small, we have the capacity to be called what she, I think it's her. I've read a couple of books, so I apologize for not knowing exactly. But I think it's her that talks about ferocious transparency. And that type of transparency can only be done in a small group that people feel safe with. I've had direct experience where this is a very important practice if we are to unravel not only our conditioned self, but also the current conditions of white supremacy and racism that's going on, that's arising continuously in our country. If we cannot have conversations with two or three of us, it's going to be near impossible to have conversations in larger groups. If we can invite each other in small groups to begin to be transparent with who we are, what we're afraid of, what confuses us, these conversations are powerful in their ability to transform ourselves, transform our views of who we think we are. We're not as limited as who we think we are. Our capacity as individuals and our collective capacity is really, it's inconceivable to our minds. And I would just want to end this idea of connection. I want to end with, in the book she talks about starlings, this murmuration. So I'd like to end, I'd like to talk about what she says about starlings and then end with Katagiri Roshi, and then if there's any questions or comments, please feel free to bring them forward. In relation to starlings, what she says is that the synchronized movement patterns of a starling flock is known as murmuration. Guided by simple rules, starling murmurations can react to their environment as a group without a central leader, orchestrating their choices in any instant. Any part of the flock can transform the movement of the whole flock. Collective leadership, partnership, and adaptability. And then Katagiri Roshi. Without stirring a single atom or disturbing a single form, we enter into mystical cooperation with all dharmas and completely penetrate all times. This is also in the Bendawa, which is a chant that we chant oftentimes in Sishin. The Bendawa is a essay that Dogen wrote. It becomes the wonderful performance of a great symphony. This is the way of burning one's life continuously and completely to the limit in each thing, an event one encounters. This is called Buddha's work. Here, only the world of benefiting others exists. It is the reality of the most humble, quiet, and vivid practice of the path, without any arrogance whatsoever. Thank you. We have about 6 minutes if you have. Yes.
Could you just repeat the name of the book and the author?
Sure.
Merchants.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. I got it. And I got the book too. I'll show it to you. Emergent Strategy by Andrea Marie Brown.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Thank you for your words.
Yeah, thank you.
GD, thank you for the talk.
Thanks, Rob.
I found it very valuable for me. Kitchen comes up for me in some ways. One, in case Yokai didn't mention it, our wonderful gardener, Teresa, has harvested a whole bunch of vegetables, which are in our kitchen, and you're welcome to take as many home as you like today.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's great. Thank you.
And speaking of kitchens, I've worked in kitchens, and restaurant kitchens are some of the most hectic, fast-paced places that I've ever worked, where it's very easy for stress to be very high, that you can feel in the air. There are a lot of workplaces like that. What advice can you offer and you're an experienced Tenzo, that I'm mindfully working is something that I'm always working on, and trying to be mindful of things. And one of the things that you said early on was slow down if you can. What about a circumstance that you're thrown into where slowing down is not really an option? Do you have advice for how you can engage in something that you need to engage in quickly, but yet do it mindfully?
Yeah. So I too have worked in kitchens. That's part of my that's part of my growing point in working as a Tenzo in clouds and water. Responding to conditions, there are times when we need to respond wholeheartedly and quickly. And how do we do that in relationship to a mind that's not confused, that a mind that has some clarity and can respond? Because if you look at some of the Aikido masters and the martial arts people, I mean, their movements are quick, they're fast, they're nimble, they're precise. And that's the same with the Tenzo too, is that you can be quick, you can be nimble, you can be precise. It's part of taking the cushion, the practice into the kitchen of realization and working there. It's not separate. And discerning is what is an appropriate response. And there are times you have to be quick. We can't be slow. And mindfulness doesn't mean we're slow. That's not mindfulness. That's just an opinion of what mindfulness is. Mindfulness is whatever the situation is calling. And what is that situation calling? Well, if I'm noisy, my mind is full of stuff, I'm not going to hear. I'm not going to hear in the stillness what's necessary. So how can I still this mind to respond appropriately? So I don't know if that helps, but that's a great question. Thank you. Yeah.
Gentle Dragon, you said that ferocious transparency can only be done in a small group where people feel safe.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you can address how to apply that to the situation in America today where people are just so divided and vested so much in their own positions emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
How would you begin even to suggest a group to discuss the state of the country right now like that?
Okay, that's a really good question, and it's something that I am currently struggling with, and that's why I am reading what I'm reading, and that's why I'm putting myself in situations that I'm putting myself into. These conversations are very, very important. I mean, one thing I do not want to do, I do not want to add to my own insanity, and I do not want to add to the insanity of others. There is so much destabilization as I define it. That's my opinion. I see a lot of chaos and destabilization. This ferocious vulnerability, what does that look like? It looks like you find people, like-minded people initially, and you have hard conversations, beginning of hard conversations. What are hard conversations? Well, for me, hard conversations are genocide. Hard conversations are anti-racist work as a white woman, being racist, trying to do anti-racist work, dismantling white supremacy, dealing with my own white supremacy in relationship to the collective white supremacy. And imagine this. Just saying that, it frees me up. It frees me up to really see that in full view and work with it. Because if I do not work with it, what happens, and there's another beautiful book written by King. Ruth King, Mindful of Race. She talks about the in anti-racist work, there are six hindrances. One of the hindrances is intent and impact. I do not intend to hurt people, and I do. That's the impact I have. And how do I work with that? I work with that by finding people I feel safe with. One, two, three, and grow it so I can begin to have these hard conversations about my impact. I want to have a good impact. I want to be beneficial. We all want to be, unless we have some kind of pathological illness in relationship to people. I think generally we are innately good. I believe that. And that's the goodness that connects all of us. So when I have impact based on my intent, I want to do repair. And I can learn to do repair more easily in a smaller group than a larger group. So I develop my capacity to have these conversations. And pretty soon, two or three becomes four or five. Four or five becomes six and seven. Pretty soon, it's a larger group to have these conversations. So we train ourselves through these conversations with each other, with this fierce vulnerability, because it takes energy. It takes energy for me to lie and say to you, I'm not racist. That's just bullshit. I am racist. And I'm working on it. And I'm working on it as fast as I can. And when I stand in that, I'm like, wow, I'm good. I'm good. And if I'm good, you're good. We're all good. We're all doing what we can. So I thank you for that question. It's a great question. Yeah. Yeah, we're done. Sorry. Thank you all very much for your kind presence.